This is 4:55 on Friday, November 15th. So, good morning. So today we're going to talk about the proxy server, which is the next project, and just take a tour of what the concepts are and what some of the ideas are in it, and then we'll look at the forking server pattern that goes along with it. So, you're creating a proxy server. Remember what a proxy server does. It's a server that sits in between your browser and the actual web servers of the world, and it can do all kinds of different things from that position. So, we talked in the earlier textbook session about using a proxy server as a cache, which would be a proxy server that actually recorded the pages that came to it, saved them away, and then used them to satisfy later requests. We're not going to do anything so fancy. All we're going to do is be a proxy server with no purpose whatsoever except to be a proxy server and reveal what's going on in the protocol. I mean, that's the other thing that this proxy server does, is that because of the output it produces, you get to see more about what happens in the protocol. I've used proxy servers in the past that did advertising filtering, animation filtering, etc. But these days, the web browsers have got all that stuff included, so those are not so interesting anymore. Okay, so we're going to be using now TCP again, client-server pattern. But now you have to deal with the fact that your proxy server is both a server and a client at the same time. Right? So it's got to do both sides of things at once. And, of course, we'll be learning about the multi-threaded or forking server. All right. I will offer you the opportunity to do a different project if there's some networking project that you would really like to do instead of this one. One of the things that I would be interested in having would be, I don't know if you remember that diagram that has the lines going back and forth that shows how TCP ends up doing fair sharing between multiple users. If somebody wanted to do an illustration of that and sort of convince me that it really represented what was going on, that would be pretty cool. If you want to do some research into something and write a paper, that would be okay too. But you have to negotiate it ahead of time. And any alternate needs to be negotiated ahead of time. Okay. Of course, if you want to create the next Facebook or Twitter and give me shares in the company, that would that would be cool too. But that may be a little beyond the scope of what could be done in the next 2 weeks. All right. So. Well, I don't know if it would guarantee you get an A, but it might guarantee you get a job or something. All right, implementation, C, C++, Python, Java, C#, something reasonable.
In other words, don't cheat.
Probably not Perl, or...
That would be painful.
Delphi, or Ruby, but, you know, the usual suspects. But the point is, all of these languages have libraries that will do most of this project for you, and you don't get to use those. Okay, that's the deal. You really have to write the code to inspect the messages and understand what's in them. Okay, so what will you be turning in? Some of the usual stuff. Put it all in a zip. Does it say put it in a zip file? Yes, it says put it in a zip file and submit it to a Dropbox on Angel. And if the Dropbox isn't there, feel free to email me to remind me to create it. That seems to be an ongoing problem in the way I do things. So I'll do that. Okay, so a comments file. I'll describe what's in the comments file a little bit later. The README file is, you know, typical README. It says how does the TA supposed to put this thing together and make it work. Okay, so what does it do? What does a proxy server do? Well, it's a server, right? So it starts out by doing the necessary TCP things to be able to accept connections. But now what's going to be different is that immediately after accepting a connection, we're going to create a separate process or thread to handle the interactions with that client, allowing the main server to go back to its accept call and accept connections from another client at the same time. So that way, this server is able to handle multiple clients simultaneously. If you're using C or C++, you have an additional obligation, which is to clean up after your child processes that die. Using wait, and we'll go through that in the server pattern. If you're using Python, I don't remember whether you have to do that. If you're using Java and Threads, you don't have to do that because you don't have dead child processes. You only have dead threads, and dead threads are collected by the garbage collector, so that's cool. Okay, so having accepted a connection, we create a separate process. In that separate process, we're going to read an HTTP request from the socket and create a new socket. And now here's where we play the client role. We're going to create a new socket and connect it to the server that the original client was asking for, okay, in order to retrieve the page. And then we're going to pass along the HTTP request to that other server, read the server's response, and pass it back to the original client. And all the while you're doing this, you'll be printing out headers of these things that are going by. You're not going to print out the entire contents of the page, especially these days with lots of images. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but when doing a sort of simple page, you may want to try it on some simple pages first, where you do print out those things in order to just be sure you know what's going on. Now, I suggest trying it out on, well, I require trying it out on these two pages, the class calendar, cnn.com, and then you get to choose one other one that you think might be interesting, that might have some interesting features in it that you want to explore, and in your comments file explain the headers that you see in that process. I picked www.cnn.com because that one seems to be one that drives people crazy. I don't know what's difficult about it, but people who've tried that in the past have often found that it was challenging, and I don't know why. It may be using advanced features of HTTP that we haven't talked about, or what. I don't think we've ever. But anyway, the point is not to necessarily be entirely successful on such things, but to understand what's going on. Okay, so one of the things, remember, that we talked about with HTTP 1.1 was its capability of handling multiple pages on the same connection, right? Unlike HTTP 1.0, where you had to make a connection, retrieve an object, close the connection, make another connection, HTTP 1.1 allows reuse of connections, and that poses some difficulties with the proxy server that you may not want to deal with. And so one thing that you can do in your proxy server is you can sort of force things back into the 1.0 state, where you don't do streaming, okay? And you can do that by modifying the headers, and it tells you about how to do that. Okay. Post. We haven't talked much about post. Post is the way that browsers send data, is one of the ways that browsers can send data to servers. And one of the things that you have to pay attention to in handling post is that you have to pay attention to the content length header, because it tells you how many bytes you have to read from your client-side connection and pass on to the other side. One of the things that it's very important in this project to keep in mind is that you must know how many bytes you're reading and writing in every interaction. Don't just say, I'm writing as many bytes as the buffer size. No, you can only write the number of bytes that you received from your client. You must know how many bytes you can receive. If you try to receive beyond what the client has said it's going to supply, what's going to happen?
Fail.
Well, no, it's not going to fail. It's going to hang. Okay? And then you'll be wondering, why won't my proxy do anything? Well, it's not getting anything. So that's very important. So I think the thing that I always suggest that people do is start by just implementing an HTTP server that is a very simple HTTP server. All it does is accept HTTP requests, print them out at the proxy server, and send back a reply to the client that says, yeah, that was successful. Okay, it's just very basic. So get the server side working first, then get that working as a forking server, and then finally get things working where you actually interact with other web servers. That would be my suggestion, because in order to make those connections to the other server, you have to get better and better at parsing the headers that you're getting. Okay, so that's the main thing. All right, so time. In some ways, this is simpler than the router project. I mean, it's conceptually simpler, I think. But how long does it take? It took me, like I said, it took me 10 hours to sort of simultaneously develop the assignment and write the code that did it. Okay? So that was how long it took me. The TA who didn't have to write, not our TA, but previously the TA, who did not have to write the specification for the assignment simultaneously, said it took him 8 hours. Students usually take about twice that. Now, if you find that you're sort of getting upward of 20 or 25 hours, then something's wrong, and you need to come see me, because there's something conceptually missing, or there's too much sloppiness in your coding, or something, because it's not that hard, okay? And I know it's not that hard, but every year there are students who sort of get off on the wrong track and then
spend lots of time
trying to get it to work. Okay? So ask questions early. So a significant part of this is about sort of interpreting the interpreting what you're seeing there, as well as actually having working code. Right? So that's the big picture, and of course you don't really get the details until you dive into it and start writing it, but that's fine.
So Isaac. The best way to test this project is to open up a web browser until it connects to your
box. Right. So let me show you about configuring proxies. This is Firefox. Let me think about where it is now. It's on networking.
Network.
Yes. So Firefox, it's on network. And you go here. And you can say, kind of backwards. You'd wish that you could have you'd wish you could have a list of sites here that you were going to use the proxy for. So I definitely recommend that you have that you do this with one of at least two browsers. Right? You'll want one browser that's not configured to use your proxy server, so you can use it to look up documentation and the like. And another one configured to use your proxy server. The other thing that I frequently forget is that after getting this thing working, I go off and just leave it configured to use the proxy server, and then it doesn't work when the proxy server is not running. So, yeah.
Uh-huh. That allows you to have a pattern matching so that you use a certain proxy to get to a certain site.
For certain sites. How very clever. That would be fine. That would be a good thing. Similarly, you can configure just about any browser. You just have to poke around in it until you find where you set the proxies. We're not using... Don't change the system proxy settings. And in Windows, probably when you change the system proxy settings for Internet Explorer, it changes it for everybody who uses that setting. So I don't like that setting. No auto-detecting of proxy settings. But usually I want to have no proxy these days. So we'll cancel that. All right. So, after having handed you scribbles about all these socket patterns for all semester, I realized that actually I did have some typed up notes. So this is review, that's fine. They're linked for today's lecture. So the basic server socket pattern, remember, is socket bind listen, and then while something accept, and then while something else send and receive, and eventually close, and you're done. Okay, that's what we did in the first assignment. Similarly, for the client, socket connect, and then send and receive, and close. That's fine. But let me point out again, it's very important, when you say send to a TCP stream, when you say send 100 bytes, how many bytes will be sent? What? An indeterminate number between 1 and 100. Okay? You must write code that is prepared for that. When you say receive 100 bytes on a TCP connection, what do you get? An indeterminate number between 1 and 100. If you get 0, what does it mean? End of stream, right? So that 0 is special, but... 1 to 100. Make sure your buffers are big enough for the things that are going to be put into them. So if you pat, if you say receive 100 bytes, you better have a buffer that's got at least space for 100 bytes in it. And that gets tricky because sometimes, you know, you're saying, I really expect 100 bytes, right? That's what I've got to get. And I got 40, say, and now I want to go on from that point and receive some more. You got to be careful to make sure that the number that you pass to receive and the remaining space in the buffer, if that's what you're passing, is compatible, right? This is, again, why C programming is painful. You know, you got to keep track of this stuff. You mess it up, you have a buggy program, a program that dies in inexplicable ways. It has security potential violations in it. So, yes, and it turns into 24 hours of debugging instead of a pleasantly working proxy server. All right, datagrams. Still reviewing. Create a socket. Send to and receive from in the case of unconnected sockets, or send and receive in the case of connected sockets. Close the connection when you're done. Okay, so both of these basic patterns that we've used only support one client at a time. There's something missing here. This is ridiculous. Why is it not making that fit? Okay. So, one of the things about TCP that we really haven't talked about is that TCP implementations have these optimizations in them that try to avoid sending tiny packets. And one of the things that can happen is that a server, that a TCP using program can say send, and the TCP implementation underneath will delay that send to see if the client is about to provide some more data to send. So there's a TCP flag called TCP no delay that actually helps with that. I don't think it's terribly relevant for this project, but just be aware that sometimes if you're trying to have a really interactive TCP session, one where you type in it and it echoes back and so forth, TCP no delay may be a desirable thing. Okay, so that's all background. What we really want to talk about is the forking server. All right, so it starts out just like the regular server. Socket bind listen, and then a while loop that contains an except. Okay, so remember, except produces a new socket, but then immediately after the except, we use a fork operation to create a child process, a second process, which will then do all the work associated with interacting with the client. So remembering from 360 that it's the child that returns zero. That's another 360-ism. It's the child process that returns zero from fork. We close the original listening socket because we don't need it in the child. So let's just get rid of it. And then essentially, although I've put a while loop here, generally I prefer that there be a separately defined function that then goes on and does all the work, because otherwise this code just kind of explodes and you don't see the pattern. So stick all this in a separate function if you would. But this is the logical structure. So then we send and receive with the client. We do that for as long as we want to, and when we're done, we close the socket that came back from the accept. And there's something missing here. There should be an exit system call in the child. Exit 0. We don't want the child to run on into the code that the parent process does. What does the parent process do? It closes the socket that was the result of the accept, because it's not going to have any interactions with that. and then it does this child process reaping thing. So it keeps track of how many children it has created with this child count variable, and it then goes into a loop. Every time it creates a new child, it goes through this process of cleaning up for old ones. So it says, while I still have some children to worry about, let's see if any of them have died. And it does that with the wait PID system call. The arguments to this are a particular process ID or -1 to mean any process. And so we're using any process. Null, which I don't remember what it's for. It is supposed to be a comma, not a period. Okay. And W no hang. So W no hang is sort of like the same issue that we had with select. If you do a wait PID, sort of just in the classical way, it'll sit there and wait for the child to finish. Then the parent is hung and not able to do anything. So W no hang says, all right, just tell me 0 if there aren't any, and I'll be happy and go off and do something else. Okay? So if wait PID returns 0, then break, otherwise decrement the number of children. Okay. That's all there is to it. the parent code, when it's still serving flag ends, should close the socket. Now, the while still serving here. I don't care if you do anything terribly sophisticated about that. It's perfectly okay to just kill this with a control C or whatever at the end. That's fine. Now, there's also notes on select here. You could have had. Instead of my hand-scribbled ones. But the hand-scribbled ones were actually very good, because they had the whole story laid out, more so than this does. So, in some ways that was okay. But let's talk about select in the context of this project. Do we need select for this project? What do we think? I don't think so. Because the way it works is every request that you get from your client, you turn around and make a request to the other server. You can read all of the answer back from the other server. You know how much of it there's going to be, if you're paying attention. If you're either paying attention to content length headers or noticing when end of file happens, You can pass things along to your client just fine. And so you don't ever have to deal with the possibility of getting input from two different places at one time. So I don't think you need select for this. Which is certainly a simplification. All right. So, I think that's pretty much the story of this project. Any questions? Yes?
I think I remember you saying that you're supposed to accept any connections on any port number?
No. Your proxy server will... Your proxy server will listen for connections on a particular port number, and it does need to be prepared to connect to any port number on the other server. Okay? Although that's certainly a more advanced feature that I wouldn't worry about, at least initially. Okay? But remember what the default port is for HTTP. It's port 80. The other thing that we have not talked about at all in this class yet, and we will when we talk about Chapter 8, is the use of secure HTTP, the HTTPS protocol. Browsers, when configured to use proxy servers, do not use them for HTTPS protocol. They only use them for HTTP. Why is that? Because proxy servers, so by definition of the way HTTPS works, can't see what the client is requesting, nor can they see what the answer is. So the proxy for that doesn't really work. All right. Just thinking if there's anything else. I think that's it for this. I'm going to reboot my computer into Windows so we can look at the PowerPoint slides. So that'll take just a moment. So that we can finish up on mobility. Okay, so we talked about mobile IP and said that we've never, any of us, seen this actually being used, so that didn't seem very interesting. You could study that if you want to. In cell networks, mobility, we're much more familiar with that. Of course, we have different cellular providers. They have different cellular bits of cellular infrastructure within their service area. So I think the huge issue with cellular networks is that they have to have a database, really, that says where you are at any given time. And they have to change the way calls are routed pretty much in real time as you move about. And so this has improved greatly over the life of cellular services. Not only have the individual providers gotten better coverage, but they also seem to have gone away from this idea that roaming is something that's hard to do and therefore needs to be expensive for you, the customer. They seem to handle it pretty well these days. Somebody wants to call you, get sent to your home cellular provider, figures out where you are, forwards it. Ultimately finds you and you have a connection. Okay? So I guess they don't worry too much about optimizing away this little diversion there. That's not a big deal. Not a big deal for
it's just for the initial connection too, right?
Yeah. Oh, but notice, let's see, looks, there was something else I saw here. Oh, gets roaming number of mobile and visited networks. So it passes it back and sort of builds a connection that goes directly from the correspondent to you. So it's sort of like the access point thing. You know, you have not only your own phone number, you have this pseudo phone number that corresponds to wherever you are and whoever's providing your service at a given time. Of course, it gets more complicated as you move about from one cell tower to another. But again, they're doing pretty well at that these days. Now, what I don't know is whether maybe some of you have experience with this. I don't use my cell phone enough while I'm moving to know. But suppose that you move from a place where there's only Sprint coverage to only AT&T coverage. Will it maintain a phone call across that transition? Okay, I don't know because I don't ever do that. So I'm not one to drive around with my, well, we're not any of us supposed to be driving around talking on the cell phone, but riding around with somebody else driving could happen. Well, but it's not illegal, which is the other one is. Okay. What happens when you have the same mobile switching center? Allocate resources, allocate channel, and switch. You know, it's just amazing. $35. It does all that. You know? It's... I'm an old guy, I guess, because I find it sort of just short of magic. If you're moving between mobile switching centers, things get more complicated. Fine. Comparison of terms. But this happens all the time, and that, as far as I know, never happens to first approximation. Okay, so what does wireless and mobility have to do with these higher level protocols? It's pretty transparent in terms of basic functionality. But remember, for example, that we found that in wireless Ethernet, Wi-Fi networks, they use acknowledgements at the link layer to protect TCP from seeing lost packets as being congestion. You don't want, it's an instance where even though that functionality exists at the higher level to deal with lost packets, you don't want to let it see that because its overall response will not be optimal or even very good. Limited bandwidth of wireless links, I think that's getting to be less and less of an issue. Yeah, you can keep it wireless. It's insane. It's so much easier than wired. So anyway, we did wireless and mobility. You can look at that. So that's what we're gonna. That's it for the wireless and mobility chapter. I gave you some questions that are due sometime, whenever. I don't remember. And next time we will start on chapter 8. So we're gonna skip over the chapter on multimedia and go directly to security, because I think security is way more important than multimedia, and way more relevant to networking than multimedia.
So what's your take with CDMA and GSM for which one do you prefer?
I don't know enough to know.
America is the only place that uses CDMA, which is French.
CDMA basically can use the chip. You can change your provider.
Okay.
So as the main thing that I have.
You had said we could possibly do an alternative project.
Uh-huh.
The proxy. Uh-huh. That'll fake the project. That I wrote a basically a VPN connection monitor program,
mm-hmm.
that will, after you establish a VPN connection, will start and stop connector programs,
mm-hmm.
that you define based on whether that VPN connection's up or not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's enough to really replace a proxy project.
I don't think so.
I think I just.
I'm interested.
It was fun, right?
Yeah.
I use it every single day.
Oh,
so.
Cool.
Yeah. And I use a lot of stuff at class around school too.
Yeah, it's. I think it's sort of more of an OSE project than it is a networking project.
Yeah.
It has
a little bit of IP kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I'd rather you sort of looked into something networky.
I agree.
Okay.
I just wanted to.
Yeah. Thanks.
I still cannot get the socket to connect with the one that's the extra one.